Is this probably the most contested Republican primary that we've had, or has there one been one before that was
bigger? Well, I'd have to, dig a little deeper.
Because, I mean,
it's pretty contested, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you that there wasn't one more contested, but it's certainly among the most.
Yeah.
The last few cycles, you started seeing a lot more Republican primaries. And so let's leave it up to the voters, right?
Yeah.
That's what it's about. And so if a House district or Senate district elects a more conservative member, then they're going to be a conservative member. And they're going to expect them to go in and do what a conservative Republican would do, school choice, do the things that, that Republicans want done. So, the conflict becomes there are Republicans and, they want to represent a district that may not feel that way. Well, and then they don't vote that way. Well, then that's what a primary is about, right?
Right.
And that's why elections have consequences.
David Weeks, thanks for coming and being on State House. I was thinking the other day before, and I've been wanting to get you on for a long time and I'll talk about that in a sec. But we have known each other and been working together for almost 25 years.
Yes, a long time.
It's like all of a sudden you look up and 25 years has gone by, and we're still politics. But the other thing that I thought about that was pretty interesting is, so I think our listeners and the viewers, they see the front-facing part of politics,
mm-hmm.
which is the elected official or the corporate entity, or they see the commercial, they see the, whatever, they get a letter, all those kinds of things, but they really don't see what goes on, all of the people behind the scenes that make...
There's a reason for that, too, pal.
I know. Yeah. That's why it was so hard to get you on.
Right.
But,
yeah.
That's kind of... As much as you can, maybe talk a little bit about Weeks and Company. You started this in 1981.
Right, right.
And you've been doing corporate and political communications and positioning for a long, long time, and worked on probably most of the major statewide campaigns.
Last 40 years.
Like 40 years of it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I've been blessed. I'll tell you, it's business is... It's been good, and I've helped a lot of people, and they've helped me. So it's been fun. But I started, as you said, my company in 1981. I was already working in politics. When I started in politics as a young man, I was a Democrat, conservative Democrat, like most.
I remember
this was the 70s, I had an opportunity to work for Doc Briscoe, the governor at the time, and worked in his campaign and worked with my mentor, who was a gentleman by the name of George Christian, who I thought a lot of. I worked in the Briscoe campaign and started picking up all the pieces that I could see I would need as I moved forward in my career. And saw pretty quickly my degrees in journalism, communications, that, this is where I wanted to be, was in the messaging side of it. So I got involved in the press, doing press releases, and I was deputy press secretary. I was a deputy speechwriter, and started honing skills for script writing and dialogue and things like that at a very young age. And so when I made the decision to go out on my own, I went into TV, primarily media, and my expertise has been, and it continues to be, political TV. 30-second TV ad, basically, which is the go-to.
The bread and butter.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, different ones now. There's 15 seconds. There's because of what's going on with social media and texting and things, a lot of it's changed. But so I started, I became a media consultant, and that required being able to do all kinds of media. We did radio. We did direct mail. We did, I actually owned a printing company for a while to do direct mail with.
No, I didn't.
We did, obviously at the time, they're not popular anymore, but billboards.
Yeah.
Although I think they may be coming back.
There's a few.
And so I started in specializing in media. And that When I started my company, that's what kicked it off, was the victories we had with candidates that I think our media helped. And my career and my business started to grow. And in the, I was mid-80s, late-80s. I had an opportunity presented to me to switch parties. And I took it because I was, as I said, a conservative Democrat. I'm from Abilene and had an office in Abilene, and one of the most conservative cities in Texas.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of Republicans back in the 80s.
Right. And, my friend Rick Perry and I switched at the same time. He was a legislator and me as a consultant. And we started working together in his state rep races. And he ran for ag, and then he ran for lieutenant governor, and so on and so on. So it was late 80s. I worked a lot with Karl Rove. He was had a lot to do with bringing me into the Republican Party. Became a Republican and have been ever since. And seen a lot of changes, obviously, because my change from being a conservative Democrat to a Republican was pretty common at the time. I mean, it was starting to happen. Rick was one of the early guys to switch. Of course, Phil Graham was probably one of the first to switch. But they were starting to happen. And then candidates that were elected as Democrats were switching. My brother was a district judge in Abilene, and he was elected as a Democrat. And when Bush was governor, and Bush went to him and asked him to switch, and he did. He was one of the early switchers. And so that was starting to happen. In the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. As that started happening, then Republicans started winning more races. And then you saw the state Senate become more Republican. You saw the House becoming more. And as you remember, it wasn't that way in the 70s, in the early 80s.
No. Like you said, everybody was a conservative Democrat, right. And there was very few Republicans. And when I got up here, which was in the 90s, actually I came up after law school, I was here. In 1990, and there was by that point you were starting to see that there was actually kind of a strong Republican movement, but it wasn't until 2003, right?
Nineties when Bush won the Rick Perry and Kay Hutchison were the first Republicans elected as ag and treasurer
statewide.
Obviously, Clements had been elected, and Senator Tower, they were the first, really. But Rick and Kay, and then Bush ran, he won. And then, so you started seeing more and more of it. But by the late 90s, I'm trying to think of the date, it was pretty much done. It was pretty much all Republican. I think it was maybe Dan Morales, AG.
Oh, yeah.
Was still in there. Maybe Mara was still in there. I have to go back and look at it was somewhere in there where it became, the ballot, the up and down the ballots are Republicans, and it's never changed since.
No, it hasn't. I guess I was thinking of 2003. I guess I was thinking of when Craddock became Speaker. That was kind of a big election right before that.
Right. So it was a little harder, right? But it was during that period. And so, I primarily do media and started working. As I became more involved in statewide races and working with statewide candidates, I started doing more public affairs work. I never lobbied, never felt comfortable lobbying. My clients, it was just a personal decision. It was a business model that may have been the smartest one.
Yeah.
But it was something I was comfortable with.
Take it from a 30-year office.
That I, wanted to be their consultant and their advisor and friend and not have to worry about go talk to them about something. So that was a decision I made. And so I did do a lot. I worked a lot with lobby teams, as I'd worked with you.
Yeah.
I say we worked together.
Right.
And, you would be the lobbyist, and I'd work with you on messaging. Public affairs and videos and ads and that sort of thing. And, we had a lot of success with it. So I do have that public affairs side. I worked in a lot of different states. The biggest state outside of Texas that I worked in, as you know, was Nevada.
Right.
And I worked since I started working in Nevada in 94. And I'm still doing work there.
Are you still? Okay.
Yeah, I did the independent expenditure for the governor this last cycle, Governor Lombardo. And he's, you know, a great guy, but he won that. It was Democrat held it. Anyway, so
you worked on the U.S. Senate campaign for, because you brought him here to Austin.
Dean Heller, Brian Sandoval.
Sandoval,
yeah. Governor. You ran for governor.
Governor, yeah, governor.
Yes,
yeah.
Sandoval.
He was great. I liked
it. He was a very popular guy.
Yeah.
He retired, and he's working in, last time I heard he was working in the gaming industry. But, yeah, Sandoval, Kenny Gwynn, he was governor before him, was a client. Dean Heller, who ran for Senate,
was
a client.
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of work. John Ensign, U.S. Senator from Nevada, was a client. So anyway, it's a great state. I love Nevada. But my point is, I not only just work in Texas, I work in other states, but Texas is the best state to work in for politics because there's so many races. They're all elected.
So huge. Yeah.
I mean, everybody gets elected, and you know, there's very few appointed, positions in Texas, as you know. So it's a great state, and a lot of consultants around the country, they're from smaller states who want to break in the national pot, want to come to Texas, and it's tough to do. But it's you know, so the Republicans, you know, started taking over Texas and working it, and you know, bringing it to where we are today. But during that process, things have happened. You know, I'm familiar with what happened because I was around at the time. When I was a conservative Democrat working with conservative Democrats in the primary, they started losing. And they never lost, you know, the Democrat, but more liberal Democrats started.
When was that? When
was it? About 86, 87, somewhere in there.
Okay.
And conservative Democrats were starting to get picked off in the primary.
Was there an issue? Was there a particular issue?
No, except they probably thought they weren't, the Democratic Party thought some of these Democrats weren't liberal enough, you know, which is something we're seeing now in the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
So then we'll get into that in a minute. But
yeah.
You've seen it before. We've seen it before. It's from a different perspective. So conservative Democrats started, you know, leaving the party. And that's another thing that helped drive it. So as we move forward with this, and as elections keep coming, we started seeing the phenomena of that Republicans then started becoming more critical of Republicans that didn't want to were working hard to follow the Republican line. For example, if you ran for office as a Republican and you said, well, I'm going to go in term limits, and you get up there, you can't, or you don't do it, and they're going to come back and say, well, why didn't you do it? Well, I couldn't get it done. Well, why can't you get it done? Well, there's too many Democrats.
Yeah.
And so that process of a bit of purity in how Republicans, when they say what they're going to do, they do. And that started really what we became the Tea Party movement. It happened in like 2010 or 2009 or 2010.
Yeah, that's right.
And that became and then Republicans became, okay, you're going to run as Republican, this is what you're going to have to stand for, right? And it made sense. I mean, a lot of people, it was the right, they felt it was the right thing to do. And, you know, elections have consequences, right? And this is what we're seeing now in
absolutely
in the last primary we just had a week ago. This is what it's about. This is what elections are about. I think it's robust to see. I think it's good to see primaries. It used to be a Republican in a primary would never be challenged.
Yeah.
And now they're getting challenged, and that's okay.
I was going to ask that. You bring up a good point. I've said this, and I don't know if I'm correct, but this primary, is this probably the most contested Republican primary that we've had, or has there been one before that was
bigger? I'd have to, you know, dig a little deeper.
Because, I mean,
it's pretty contested, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you that there wasn't one more contested, but it's certainly among the most.
Yeah.
But
you're right. For years, there was never, you didn't get primaried at all. Yeah.
But in the last few cycles, you started seeing a lot more Republican primaries. And so let's leave it up to the voters, right?
Yeah.
That's what it's about. And so if a House district or Senate district elects a more conservative member, then they're going to be a conservative member. And they're going to expect them to go in and do what a conservative Republican would do, you know, school choice, you know, do the things that, you know, that Republicans want, you know, want done. So, you know, the conflict becomes there are Republicans and, you know, they want to represent a district that may not feel that way. Well, and then they don't vote that way. Well, then that's what a primary is about, right?
Right.
And that's why elections have consequences. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that because that ultimately will decide what the how the voters
right.
in that district
that district
want.
Yeah, the district what determines they vote.
And so there are people out there, and Governor Abbott was one of them, that you know, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, that felt strongly that these some of these people needed, you know, to understand that. And look, it doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter how much, you know, you spend. It's all about the candidates. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, money obviously helps, and I'm not going to tell you it doesn't, but you can't, in a lot of these races that are competitive, you can't outshout or outbuy somebody. You can outbuy them, but it doesn't really matter. The districts are so small that everybody knows. So it doesn't. My point is.
That's interesting.
That what, if a more conservative candidate wins that primary, well, then that's what they want, right?
Yeah.
If a more moderate Republican wins that primary, well, then that's what they want. You know?
So that's
okay.
Yeah, that's interesting because I guess I, because I'm not on the campaign side. So, you know, everything I know about campaigns, I've learned from you. And so,
yeah, sure.
And it's true. And I made an assumption that because there's so much money in these campaigns now, like, I mean, I was telling somebody earlier that if someone used to say they had $300,000 in their bank account, you'd be like, wow, boy, they've got a lot. Now it's
million.
Millions, yeah. And so, but you don't think that, I think I actually agree with you. I think the people, because they're small communities, they know the person.
Sure.
And you can throw all that at them. But right.
And if they believe it, it's because they have already made that decision. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not going to tell you that what we do doesn't matter as consultants, media, and of course it does. And
yeah.
Sometimes we have to, you know, attack and we have to rebuttal and we have to compare. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's the process. That's what we do. And that's the way that helps the electorate make up their mind. Now, but is one side that much stronger than another in that in most of these races, they're not, especially if there's an incumbent involved, because the incumbent has built an advantage.
Right.
So with those races where incumbents went down, I mean, that's a significant side that the district was ready for something different.
Yeah.
That those voters were ready. You know, and the candidates that are challenging the incumbents, I mean, they're good candidates. They really are. They're not, you know, they standing on their own in a non-competitive race, they'd do really well. There's, you know, some that you might question. At the end of the day, they're decent candidates. They're somebody that will serve honorably and do a good job.
Right. They're not just being placed.
They're not just being put in by some puppet master.
Yeah.
You know, they're good candidates. And that's important because that does drive a winnable election is having a good candidate. It makes a huge difference. And so there's that is involved in the process as well. So it gets back to my point that, you know, elections have consequences. If that's what these voters want, then that's what they're going to get.
Yeah.
And then if that's not what they want, they'll vote them out the next time.
Vote them out the next time.
But,
yeah.
So we'll see. And, but that, you know, it's interesting, but it's not new. The dynamic of that political movement is not new. It's just become it's moved into the Republican Party. And you're seeing it in the Democratic Party.
Right.
You're seeing more moderate Democrats
and progressives
lose to the progressives.
Yeah.
And that's creating a problem for them, you know. So it helps us when we can be up against a progressive in the general election.
Especially in Texas.
Especially in Texas. And most places, actually. Those of us in the business know that if the Democrats ever decided that they wanted to try to find more moderate candidates to put up in the election, it, it could be a challenge. I mean, we'd have a race on our hands. In the
I don't think they will, but that's the smart move, right? Yeah. But it's not going to happen.
I don't think so. You know, you saw it in that race in New York. I mean, the congressman that won, he was a very moderate, you know, he was for securing the border. Yeah, he was. You know, he's the one that was it Santos's race?
Yeah, it was George Santos's race. So I can't think of
that. And he's a former member. I mean, he had been elected, but
been around,
didn't? Yeah. I think he may have even had that seat before, but another seat. But anyway, he won, but he ran as a very moderate candidate.
Yeah,
and that's why he was the seat was held by a Republican before, but you know, the AOCs of the world and those George, billionaire
Soros.
I kept what they said.
Yeah, I know.
Soros are not going to let them do it. You know.
Yeah,
they're going to keep funding those that are, and that's good. That's good for us. So
yeah, well, you know, it's sometimes real hard to understand. I've been in the business like you have for a long, long time, and so, you know, I became cynical a long time ago. So right, but the voters and just everyday people who have to make a decision, it's so difficult for them because they don't know exactly. And I think, you know, the kind of work that you do for candidates is all about trying to get the message across so that people do understand what that elected is talking about, what they stand for, right?
Right.
But I do think it's going to be interesting how the border security issue is going to play, because it's a plan on both sides. And so it's interesting. I don't think there's a difference really on the Republican side, but on the Democratic side, it's a huge issue between the progressives and the liberals. Yeah,
and it's one of the reasons why we're seeing some growth, within the with Republicans in the Valley, because they're the Democrats there, they're unhappy with what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, those that came across legally, and did it right, did everything that it was expected that you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
They don't want to see this. They don't want this, just coming over the border without any stopping. And it's they're reluctant to support that kind of policy.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Statehouse. You can find this podcast anywhere you find your podcast today. If you like our program and you want to see more, please subscribe. And we really appreciate, if you like it, to give us a 5-star review. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.